This is Chris McGregor with information on how you can help Discerning Hearts continue our mission during our summer appeal. No doubt this has been a very challenging year, but because of the generosity of so many of our donors, it's also been a year of blessing. But to make it to the end of the year, we do need your help.
We are funded 100% by those touched by the work of Discerning Hearts.
So between now and August 22nd,
if you can help with a donation or with your prayers, it would be greatly appreciated.
You can donate by clicking on the link found on the discerninghearts.com website or inside the Discerning Hearts free app. Thank you, and God bless from all of us at Discerning Hearts.
DiscerningHearts.com presents a very special conversation entitled Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. Deacon Keating is a professor of spiritual theology at Kenrick Lennon Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri. For over a decade and a half, he also served as director of theological formation at the Institute for Priestly Formation, located at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. He has given more than 400 workshops on moral theology and spirituality and continues to regularly conduct retreats. He is also author of numerous books, including Remain in Me, Heart of the Diaconate, and Listening for Truth. Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We now continue with part two of our conversation with Deacon James Keating.
I think in some ways, there is that need for a study. And in our tradition, we've always called that catechetical. It's that period where you have this encounter with this person, and so then you want to learn everything you can about them, because this is someone you are falling in love with and you want to understand them. And in the church, we have catechetical periods where we learn about the scriptures. We learn even apologetics and those kind of things in a very practical term. And we do learn elements of prayer. There's a point when we say yes to all of that, and for the one who is baptized, who says yes, they enter into a whole different dynamic, don't they? And it's the mystery. It's the mystagogia. It's no longer the structure of the catechetical. Now it becomes the dance with the one you love. Is that being too girly about that?
Well, you're kind of, you are inevitably girly, but that's okay. Yeah. We all like girls. The thing about being girly is, that whole protection of the communion. That's one of the most beautiful gifts, the feminine genius of John Paul is that the feminine protects the communion. And so that's one of the gifts we all have to listen to and listen for. The problem with the catechetical, of course, is that it was hijacked by the academic. It was hijacked by the school. And then it became school. It became, on par with studying social science or something. And the kids all knew that. And then the adults knew it in college. And then all of a sudden, this beautiful mystery of salvation became boring because it became a three-credit class. And no matter how much you love God, you don't want to squeeze your relationship with someone you love into a three-credit class. So we have to figure out a way, and I know there's probably lots of catechists who are trying to do this, but to figure out a way how to keep the relationship front and center when we fall in love and want to know more. It's how do we know more? What is the content of the knowing more? And that we never lose the fact that Pope Benedict said endlessly that what we're looking at and beholding and wanting to know is a person, not data. And as long as we are trying to share a person, then people who are in love with that person will stay interested. But once we desiccate it and remove the person, and look at it under a microscope like it's an object, well, then it becomes school. And people get bored with school. And then they collapse their boredom into an equivalence with religion. Oh, I guess Jesus is boring. I guess God's boring. And that's been the horror of the corruption of catechesis, not true catechesis, but the corruption of it, is its reduction to schooling. And so we're afraid, though, to perhaps separate it from a schooling model, because we're always afraid that, well, then we won't have the carrot and the stick and no one will come. And of course, I don't have to worry about the finances of a parish or a parish school, so I can say something as reckless as, who cares? You know, who cares if they don't come? Half the kids that come leave anyway because you bored them to death, because you weren't actually sharing the mystery. You were sharing data. And they have data out the yin-yang, these kids. They have more data than, you know, people over 50 would ever have in their life. So they don't need data. They need a person. And the person can be communicated catechetically by reverencing the mystery. And that usually means not beating a dead horse. So once we have enough catechesis for the year, you can go home now and you can keep worshiping. Go to Mass, say your prayers with your parents, and then come back again and we'll delve into the mystery as you progress and develop yourself. As chronologically and emotionally you mature, we'll come back and maybe we'll have another summer of catechesis, or we'll have another every third month, week-long retreat where we explore the mystery together. I don't know, some kind of model that doesn't reduce all of this to what most Americans hate the most, going to school.
With data, you can control it. And I think what happens sometimes is because there are those who will, ascend to a leadership role. And I'm thinking not just priests, but I'm talking about pastoral ministers and those, and I'm probably in that boat myself, the professional layperson in the Catholic Church. We will say, this is what's worked for me. And so this is what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going outside those parameters. You're not within what worked for me, or here's all the things you need to know. Like somehow you're going to be tested and then you're going to have the great graduation ceremony. And I'm not trying to ridicule that, because in all reverence, there are moments of passage in all relationships, just like when we have that entrance into baptism and confirmation. Those are all beautiful things. But when we make them, as you alluded to, a carrot, or you've studied this much and you've learned this much, now you've just graduated as a spiritual director, and you may not have that relationship, or God may not have given you that charism. We have to be very, very, that's where the listening comes in, isn't it? I mean, that's where we have to be very careful.
We make passages to a new depth of relationship. And so just in the example we were talking about with catechesis that had become corrupted, the passage was out of the relationship. That's the corruption. I graduated, I was confirmed, or whatever you want to call it, and now the relationship is over. That's the great corruption. Of course, there are passages, but the passages are into greater depths of communion, not some type of leaving the relationship behind as a whole. And the comment about spiritual leaders is, we don't really make the gate very high, because we're so afraid we won't have enough leaders. We've always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
We think that there are so few people who will come and lead the church that let's lower the bar. And I think that, of course, the higher you raise the bar, the more spectacular leader you're going to get. And the fears that you had that we don't have enough leaders will actually be embodied. The fears that you were trying to protect, you know, we're going to have not enough activities or not enough evangelization. Well, if you have the best leader, then he will or she will embody the best, and it will be a multiplying effect. But if you have 10 poor leaders, well, people will just, you know, dissipate. They'll leave. They're not going to put up with it. So this fear that we need 10 priests, 10 more priests, 20 more deacons, 100 more nuns. Why do we? Why do we need that many? We need people who have been called, discerned that their personalities are bridges to evangelization and not obstacles, and that possess the natural and spiritual gifts to lead others, again, not to the parish property, not to themselves, but to this is my body and this is my blood. And then Jesus can have his way with them. We keep thinking we have to have leaders to keep people on church property. We don't. We actually need leaders that push them toward the Eucharist so that the Eucharist can fill them to such a level that they transform culture by their embeddedness within it. It has nothing to do with people hanging around parishes, or we need more teachers or more priests or more deacons. We just need good ones so that the lay people can be good lay people and transform culture out of the power of their obsession and their absolute love and fascination with the Eucharist. That's the mark. A while ago, Ratzinger said, you know, there's only a few things that the church is for. It's just one of them is evangelization. And the other is to worship God. That's about it. Charity, worship God, tell others about it. It's very simple. But fear makes us think we need all kinds of these people hanging around who we have let over the gate that should have been a lot higher. Whenever you talk that way, people get mad. You know, who are you to raise the bar when God calls someone? Well, who are you to think God called you? It goes both ways. Mm-hmm. This whole thing has to be discerned better. Who's receiving the call? And then it's within the power of the church to discern if you actually have received a call. And the answer to whether or not you've received a call is when the church says you have or you haven't. And you can go away mad if you want, or you can go and fight and find another bishop or find another pastor. But maybe you should just sit there and say, maybe I wasn't called. Maybe I'm supposed to be doing something else. That beautiful story about the man who was healed and Jesus said, don't follow me, go home. Go back to your village. So many people don't want to go back to the village, but they should.
We'll continue our conversation with Deacon James Keating in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app in which you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Deacon James Keating, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more are found on the Discerning Hearts free app. Did you also know that you can stream Discerning Hearts programming on numerous streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and so many more? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has the YouTube page? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts.
Litany of Humility.
O Jesus, meek and humble of heart,
hear me. From the desire of being esteemed,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being loved,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being extolled,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being honored,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being praised,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being preferred to others,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being consulted,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the desire of being approved,
deliver me, Jesus. From the fear of being humiliated,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being despised,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of suffering rebukes,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being calumniated,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being forgotten,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being ridiculed,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being wronged,
deliver me, Jesus.
From the fear of being suspected,
deliver me, Jesus. that others may be loved more than I,
that others may be esteemed more than I,
that in the opinion of the world, others may increase and I may decrease,
that others may be chosen and I set aside,
that others may be praised and I unnoticed,
that others may be preferred to me in everything,
that others may become holier than I, provided that I become as holy as I should.
Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it.
Amen.
Hello, my name is Deacon Omar Gutierrez, and I want to ask you to support Discerning Hearts in a special way. We, Chris McGregor, the board, and I all know that not everyone listening can help financially. We know we have listeners from all parts of the world, and we have made a commitment since the beginning to make the truths shared through Discerning Hearts totally free. So while you may not be able to contribute financially, what you can do is certainly pray, but also give us positive reviews on whatever platform you use to listen to us. If it's iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, however it is that you get these podcasts, or if you're on YouTube and you like our videos, please give us a good rating and write a review. The more good ratings and reviews we get, the higher our profile, and the more listeners will discover us, listeners who may have the means to contribute in the future. Please consider rating us and writing a positive review today.
We now return to our conversation with Deacon James Keating.
When I spoke earlier about rules, you know, I wasn't necessarily alluding to, say, like the holy rule of Saint Benedict. You know, by understanding, a lot of times when orders have certain rules, it's not unlike a family who has rules for the household. Those are meant to help the particular household be able to function better as a family, as a unit within that home. The rules and the structures sometimes that are alarming are the ones that are so structured that they don't allow for that listening to see what God is doing with that each person. When I think about that, I think of people like Padre Pio. He didn't fit into a particular structure, and he was outside of, he was punished for it, a Faustina who seemed to be out of the norm. Even a Margaret Mary Alcott, the blessing for her was that she had a spiritual director that listened more deeply outside of what seemed to be normative. And that would be the case for many, many saints. Sometimes you have to have the flexibility, don't you, to be able to actually hear what God is trying to do here.
Yeah, and you get that comfortability as the deeper you go into the relationship and you let go of looking at the recipe book. The recipe book very much as a guideline, you know, and then you're in the kitchen of a good Italian cook and maybe they don't know how much of the spice they're putting in, but they put it in and it comes out really, really good. And we're over there looking at the book and making sure we only have a half a teaspoon or something. And, oh, we didn't get the half a teaspoon, so I'm a bad cook. No, this is like a guideline to stay within the relationship. But as you're within the relationship, dance the way you want to dance. And that always gets certain, I'll call them conservatives, upset when you say things like that. Like, oh, no, it's not a matter of not following what the Pope says or what the Catechism says. It's a matter of being so comfortable in the relationship that you never forget that the relationship is defining you, not your success at reaching a behavioral standard. What defines you is the relationship of love, not reaching a certain behavioral standard. And I think that's what the great liberation of Christ is, that he's with us even when we don't reach the behavioral standard. This is scandalous, but that's what part of the reason Jesus got killed. And then liberals, on the other hand, they take this kind of thinking and run with it. See, behavior doesn't matter. See, you can do what you want. See, your conscience is your own decision. No, that's baloney too. And the difficulty is actually being Catholic. Being Catholic is the hardest thing on the earth. And that's why we have so many people racing to a conservative, rigid world, or racing to a loosey-goosey liberal world. is because actually being Catholic is a hard thing to do. It's actually hard to be loved and let yourself be loved long enough and deep enough so that your behavior changes as a result of that love. The thing the liberals hate is they think they're being imposed upon. They think that somehow the Pope and the Church and the Catechism are cramping their style. And the thing the conservatives believe is that the definition of life is whether or not your behavior is, you know, within the textbook. And they're trying, both of them are trying to find some kind of security outside the real relationship of God. And the real relationship with God is too painful, because you got to stay in the Mass as the Mass inhabits your body. And you have to keep receiving the Mass as the Mass changes your desires. And that's a very difficult life. But if you do it, we'll call you saint at the end of it.
That communion, that receiving the Mass and that relationship, it always has its anchors in the Word. That is something that, for me personally, has become such an important part of who I am and part of my life. It's the Word, the capital W, it's Christ, but it always anchors me and you hear it in the Mass everywhere. The Word is all over and in, through, with, and in the Word, in Him. But it's a gift of the Scriptures, and you see in the lives of the saints, even the ones who never had a physical book, maybe all they had were the little snippets that were given to them. But yet they took all of that and they received it so deeply. I mean, it is the ultimate divine communication, isn't it?
And the childlikeness again, you know, Jesus' big theme. They took it and received it so deeply. They took him at his word. They believed. They were vulnerable. They didn't try and see religion as their accomplishment. They experienced religion as a gift of this deep relationship of healing. Ratzinger said a long time ago that Christianity is basically therapeutic. If you stay in the Mass, you will be healed. If you let the Mass inhabit your body, you will be healed. It's all therapeutic. But we keep leaving the therapy. And then we go and have this false gospel, the gospel of liberalism or the gospel of conservatism. And it has nothing in it of Jesus. It's just expedient for some type of unhealed wounds that either the left or the right will not bring to the Mass. They refuse to. And so they stay liberal or they stay conservative, and they die liberal and conservative. And the extent of their imagination is purely political, and it's never sacramental. And the sacramental is what's holistic. Every truth of the world is taken up into the sacramental imagination, and only half-truths remain in the political. And so what we need to evangelize, or if catechesis is going to do anything, we have to catechize people into courage. The courage to pray, the courage to be vulnerable to Jesus speaking to them from the cross at the Mass. What's he saying? What's he doing? What's he giving at the Mass? Are you receiving it? Are you suffering it? Are you hearing it? Is it affecting you? So that your body changes, your behavior is new, or are you twisting the gift to your ends, to your liberal agenda, to your conservative agenda, to your puny political imagination, because you're too afraid to be loved by love itself. And all of this is happening in the humility of the Mass, in its quietness, in its simplicity of bread and wine and priest. What's happening? The literal healing of the sin of Adam and Eve in each one of us, being healed at the Mass every time we go, supplemented by reconciliation and founded upon baptism. The greatest gift, the greatest mystery, and yet so available to us, and yet paradoxically so rejected by us as well. Unless you become like little children, when we go to Mass, that's most apt to be like little children, filled with wonder and trust, and particularly vulnerability, openness.
In concluding this portion of our conversation, what would you say to those who they're trying in so many different ways with so much noise to discern that authentic voice, that true voice of the Master who is calling out to them from within themselves?
Yeah, again, there's only, you know, only two sources, the Pope and the saint. Those are the only two voices you need to listen to. And of course, by that I mean incarnated in our own time. Of course, those two reflect the voice of Jesus, the magisterium of the church, and the saint. Just live with those two. Stop making it so complex. You don't have to run to every workshop. You don't have to listen to every guru. You just, what's the magisterium teach? Meditate, chew on it, pray over it. Read the lives of the saints. Done.
Thank you so much, Deacon Keating.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Chris.
You've been listening to a special conversation entitled Prayer in This Present Moment with Deacon James Keating. To hear and or to download this conversation along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, and if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for more from Deacon James Keating.